On a Monday, you have aligned to a pair of Assembly Democrats on the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Later in the hour, we check in with Representative Jill Billings of La Crosse about child care challenges and bills she's working to advance. But first, it's Representative David Bowen of Milwaukee, whose district includes the village of Shorewood and neighborhoods on the north side of Milwaukee. Some roadmap here. We'll discuss the governor setting aside $45 million in federal pandemic aid to boost violence prevention and victim services, as we've seen violent crime rise to historic levels. And we start with the results of the nonpartisan legislative audit published Friday. Did it put to rest your concerns about the 2020 election or raise additional questions? 800-642-1234. David Bowen represents the 10th Assembly District. Representative Bowen, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me on.
Good morning. Let's start with your reaction to the Legislative Audit Bureau's report on the 2020 election, making 30 recommendations for the Wisconsin Elections Commission and 18 possible legal changes for lawmakers to consider. What jumps out at you?
Well, the thing that jumps out the most is the fact that this is exactly how we explained it in the beginning, the most secure election in American history. You can clearly see that there were folks with political intentions that wanted to exacerbate the results because they did not win. This was about trying to waste taxpayer dollars, not really looking into the true things that we need to do as a state to make sure our elections are more secure rather than a political football being used. So I'm glad that the results are clear. That we have been right this whole time. This was a secure election. And sure, there are some things that we can do to make sure that we keep our elections more secure in the future. And that includes investing in the local level and listening to our clerks who have gone through a tumultuous time and unneeded backlash because they were the ones that held us down during some of the toughest times to really conduct and coordinate elections, especially during a pandemic.
Assembly Speaker Robin Voss said the 168-page audit showed the need for more investigation into the election. What do you make of that sentiment?
Well, I hate that the term is being used to pretty much leave the door open so we can continue to waste taxpayer money, resources, and time. Again, because Robin Voss is getting pressure from Trump supporters, because they lost the election. This is not about them. This is about our citizens that had to brave through elements and dynamics in these last number of elections where they were risking their health. I saw and engaged those residents at the time during our own elections, and it was heartbreaking that so many people had to make the decision between engaging in democracy and being able to vote in person. So I think this is what we really should be focused on. How do we get everyone to vote, especially in ways that are secure, that are safe? When we have more access to mail-in voting, we have more access to early voting, we have more access to times when people can vote in ways where they don't have to risk the health of themselves and their fellow community members.
Speaking of opening access to voting, the report found at least 245 of nearly 1,900 municipalities used ballot drop boxes last year. Do you think statewide rules are needed for uniformity in ballot drop boxes?
I think there are some ways that we could definitely make sure that all of our drop boxes are coordinated in a way where it's safe and secure. I recognize when the city of Milwaukee switched from having drop boxes that could be moved to permanent drop boxes as well to make sure those ballots are secure and safe and that there was that they have more coordination. So I think it's possible that we can move in that direction. We've always asked for statewide intervention on a number of different issues, and I see this one as no different, to make sure there is uniformity. But I hope that is also done with the intent to not just make mandates for the local level that will not be supported, will not be financially supported. We need to be partners with the local level. And clearly, for the last number of years under Republican leadership, that relationship has strained as we've continued to take and take and take away from our local levels rather than partner with them and add in.
You see, partnerships have eroded at the local level. Is it trust breaking down? What is it?
It's resources. Our local municipalities have been strained to the max, and the state continues to be the biggest beneficiary of the local economy. And we have to pour more into our local level so that they can see more resources to invest in themselves, to take care of the things that we know that folks are calling for, those services that really matter to our seniors, really matter to our parents, our folks that are engaging in the transportation systems. We need to rebuild a lot of things in our infrastructure, and our local level needs that support. They need that help.
We're talking with Representative David Bowen of Milwaukee, reflecting on the Legislative Audit Bureau 2020 election report. We'll also be discussing what to do about rising violence. Your questions as well. Do you live in Milwaukee County? What issues are most pressing in your area? 800-642-1234 to join in. Jack is joining us from Caledonia. Hi, Jack. Go ahead.
Hi. If you look at the report from the MacGyver Institute, which is a conservative group, you know, they come up with a different scenario of what the Audit Bureau report was. Also, if you take into account that, I mean, I look at it one way, a ballot is either legal or it isn't. Wisconsin does not have a law that says drop boxes are legal. Wisconsin doesn't have a law that says clerks can change ballots if they have a little error on it, like the address is wrong or something's wrong. So those ballots should not be counted in a recount, and they all were counted in the recounts that we've done. The other thing is, if you look at, if this was fair and a fair and honest election, how can they come up with 30 items that should be addressed? I mean, it's nonsensical.
Jack, thank you. Representative Bowen, go ahead.
Sure. I think Jack is making some points that you have to also recognize. If a person is taking out their time, energy, and resource to vote, how do we make sure that their ballots are counted, especially with no fault of their own? I've seen folks that have engaged in the voting process only to have their ballot thrown out for very mundane reasons. And we have to also be very careful so we are not putting residents and folks and citizens of the state of Wisconsin in positions where they deserve the chance to vote. We believe in folks being able to engage in their democracy, only to have their votes thrown out for very small infractions, whether it's a signature not being able to be readable, especially when folks sign the ballots the way that they do, just those technical errors. It does not mean that person is illegally voting. It does not mean that person does not have the right to vote. But there are technical infractions that should be able to be fixed by our clerks.
Before we move on, I want to get your sense on the investigation. What do you want to see from former Supreme Court Justice Michael Gabelman's investigation? You keep mentioning, you know, taxpayer dollars, and this is that investigation.
Sure. I think, you know, at the end of the day, I've heard comments from Justice Gabelman that have really concerned me. And that even if he understands how elections work, you know, this really doesn't put us in a position so we can have more bipartisanship to work together. It keeps reeking of the same problems that we've had that have gotten away of us being able to work with each other, us being able to trust that we are working in good faith. I do not feel that trust is there. I do not feel that we are working together with the intention of truly making sure that every person in the state of Wisconsin gets a chance to vote, gets a chance to engage in their democracy, the founding level of engaging in government.
We have Representative David Bowen of Milwaukee. As we look at creating safer and healthier communities, do you live in Milwaukee County? What issues are most pressing? What do you want lawmakers to understand about the impact of the pandemic? Where is federal aid not getting to? Join in 800-642-1234. Back in a minute for more State Cap with Representative Bowen here on the Ideas Network. Here with us for the State Capitol Report, I'm Kate Archer-Kent. What questions do you have for Representative David Bowen of Milwaukee? Wisconsin closed out the last fiscal year with a record multi-billion dollar surplus. The unprecedented surplus has given lawmakers more latitude with the biennial budget. Where is federal pandemic aid not getting to in your community? Has your family struggled in these times? Join in 800-642-1234, Representative David Bowen of Milwaukee with us for about nine more minutes. Representative, Milwaukee is seeing its worst violence in its modern history, and FBI statistics show a nationwide trend that homicides are up everywhere. What are you reflecting on as you see this violence?
Yeah, I think one of the things that's really tough is to understand that we were making so much really good progress for years in the city of Milwaukee specifically, and that has come from the work led by the City Office of Violence Prevention, coordinated efforts to look at a multitude of things that need to be done to coordinate preventing violence before it even happens. And what we're seeing right now, it's heartbreaking because we're seeing story after story of so many situations where folks are losing their lives and getting engaged in these incidents and situations. But it really highlights how we really have to double down. You know, we have been calling in the legislature for the creation of a statewide violence prevention fund from the year of 2017. 4 years later, we would all of our Wisconsin counties and municipalities would be better prepared for spikes in violence like this, because we would have been ahead of the curve. We would have had resources on the ground, coordination already happening. And that makes sure that we are having a holistic conversation on how to create safe neighborhoods and communities by doubling down our investments in preventing things before they become even bigger problems.
You're also seeing Governor Evers committing $25 million to violence prevention programs around the state, millions to victim services. What do you make of those earmarks?
Absolutely. I'm thankful and ecstatic that the governor, took our idea, saw that the legislature was not moving to allocate those ongoing resources on a regular basis to our communities, and he used ARPA funds, created by our partners at the federal government, including the president, to include resources for this very purpose and to redirect it. This money could have been spent on anything, but the governor decided that this is what needs to be urgently invested in. And I'm thankful for the governor to prioritize that, especially for communities like Milwaukee, where we need a very large influx of resources to be able to get ahead of this.
When you say a very large influx of resources, what are you thinking of to get ahead of this violence?
I really believe on an ongoing basis that the state of Wisconsin has the chance to invest nearly $10 to $20 million into the local level annually, so that they have those resources to partner with us and to match us in following those trends of violence that are happening in their local communities and getting ahead of it. We're seeing also at the very same time numbers in domestic violence increasing. And that means that we need to have more coordination to really get to those who are engaging in to abusing their partners and those who are suffering from that violence, to be able to get access to the resources that we know that work, that we know that can intervene in those situations and really save our families.
From what I understand, the ARPA funds are a one-time infusion. Do you worry that the violence prevention programs aren't getting a sustained and committed revenue stream to ensure the future of these services?
Exactly. And it highlights what we are still calling for in the legislature. It is not a partisan idea to stop violence in our state and partner with the local community. So it really highlights what we need to do moving forward so that finally we will be able to have consistent dollars. And the idea that we had from our office was to find a levy neutral way to do that. And we did not add to the tax base or increase taxes to do that. And we're really looking for our Republican colleagues to join us in that effort. So we have to find those resources to continuously do this. So I think the governor's decision to kickstart this fund is literally what he's doing on his own. And hopefully the legislature will come around so that we can put more consistent dollar sources. We know that it works. We know that there has to be a multi-pronged approach so that our families can remain strong through some of the most tumultuous times, especially during the pandemic that we're seeing.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Representative David Bowen of Milwaukee. You can join in with your questions. What issues do you think could bridge the political divide and receive bipartisan support? Do you support legalizing recreational marijuana? 800-642-1234. Representative Bowen, I want to discuss COVID here for a moment. You were one of the first people in Milwaukee County to test positive in March of 2020. How did that experience of having COVID shape your views on legislation around the pandemic?
Sure. It was only by the grace of God that I was blessed to be sick, right? Mm. And to be able to engage my colleagues, my community. At the time, if you really think back toward the beginning of this pandemic, how much falsehoods were being thrown around about this virus. There were even predatory messages being pushed by adversarial governments of our country to exacerbate folks not trusting the fact that this was a real threat and that there were real precautions that we all needed to take to protect, especially the seniors in our families and those who have multiple pre-existing conditions. It's so important that we are able to move in the direction of protecting each other and protecting our communities. And this pandemic has tested us to the max. So it really just reminds me of the snapshot of how things are different now than when they were in the very beginning of the pandemic. You also have a really big process to ensure that folks are trusting that the vaccines work, that they're safe, that they're effective. And the more and more that people are taking the vaccine, the more that we are seeing the less chance for this virus to mutate, the less chance for this virus to continue to spread at the levels that it did before. And we all have to be a partner in that. Republicans and Democrats, and no matter what side you're politically leaning on, everyone needs to be able to be safe, be healthy.
You mentioned vaccinations, and you introduced a bill in September that would allow teens age 16 and older to get vaccinated without parental consent. Why should 16-year-olds be allowed to make that decision?
You know what? Our young people are really smart, and we have a number of different things where we trust them even before the age of 18 or 21, but they get the chance to make that decision on their own. I believe, just like with my colleagues who helped to introduce this, that this is more than fair to allow our young people to make that decision.
Have you gotten any support on any traction on this bill?
I think there are still some things where people are mulling it over. And what's really tough right now is that vaccines are a very charging issue right now. Even using masks in schools to protect our kids is being used to try to separate and divide our state and our school districts. This is a time where we really need to band together to protect each other. And this is about us protecting our communities, us protecting our families. We've lost so much through this whole process. Mm. We've lost so many citizens We've lost so many police officers. We've lost so many professionals and teachers and folks who are no longer alive with us. And I think sometimes we get so heated into debates that we are forgetting that real lives are being lost. Real families will not have those family members at the dinner table this holiday season. This really needs to be focused continuously and refocused back on us being able to protect ourselves and not the mundane arguments that sometimes come up.
We only have a few seconds left, and this isn't state capital related, but I wanted to allow just a few moments of space for you to reflect on the passing of Colin Powell. What is on your mind?
I think one of the things that I really do, and I always have connected with Colin Powell, because we both have Jamaican immigrant parents. And he was, he grew up in New York. I grew up in Wisconsin. He went on to lead one of the most impactful, highest levels of leadership as that son of Jamaican immigrant parents. And he has made this country better. He has made our country proud. And so many Black students and young people have his example to look up to.
Representative, thank you for joining us. David Bowen, representative for Wisconsin's 10th Assembly District. On a Monday, it is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You have aligned to Democratic Representative Jill Billings of La Crosse. Recently, she took part in a roundtable discussion on the challenges facing the childcare industry. Do you have a daycare provider? How has it been in the pandemic? Do you run a childcare center? Are you able to stay staffed up and keep your doors open? What could lawmakers do to support Wisconsin working families with children? 800-642-1234. Jill Billings is a representative for Wisconsin's 95th Assembly District. Representative Billings, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Good morning.
Good morning. So you met with State Senator Brad Paff and State Department of Children and Family Secretary Emily Amundson in La Crosse to look at child care issues. What did you learn?
Well, it was very interesting. We met earlier in the afternoon and talked to businesses and economic development groups, our Chamber of Commerce, and had a roundtable discussion learning about how lack of childcare is affecting them with their workforce. And then later in the afternoon, we visited with childcare providers and we learned about the challenges that they have really with that kind of razor thin margin that they have in being able to stay open in business and search for teachers, lack of people who are going into the profession. And it's a challenge here in Wisconsin, like in most of the United States.
Yeah. You know, according to the National Association for the Education of Young Children, about 3 out of 4 childcare centers in Wisconsin reported staffing shortages in the association's data that came out last month. What is childcare staffing like in your region?
Well, it's a challenge, as I said earlier. Childcare centers have trouble paying teachers a lot of money because, of course, they have to pass that charge on to parents. And so parents are we're living in a situation where some of them are paying double what they pay for their mortgage each month just to keep their kids in childcare so that they can both, so both parents can be in the workforce. So more women and men and grandparents actually are ending up staying home with kids. And those are people that we really need to have working in the workforce. Teachers in the daycare centers, because they're not paid very much because daycare centers can't pass that on to the parents. They're not making a lot of money. So they could go places, for example, like Quick Trip and increase their salaries. I heard about one woman who was working at Starbucks part-time to help supplement her love, her job working with children. So she made enough money and got some benefits at Starbucks serving coffee, and that enabled her to do the work that she really wanted to do, which was taking care of children.
Wow.
Which is such important work.
Yeah. good, safe, quality child care is expensive, as you said. And when a family is spending as much or more on child care as they do on their rent or their mortgage, what should lawmakers do as a first step to fixing this problem?
Well, I am working on creating a summer study committee with Representative Pat Snyder, who is the chair of the Children and Family Committee. I am the ranking member on that committee, and I've done a lot of research and studying in the last couple of years on things that we could do in Wisconsin to help this situation, things that other states are looking at. And these Legislative Council summer study committees, I think, are a really good opportunity to do a deeper dive into a subject area where we have legislators around the table, senators and representatives, Republicans and Democrats, and also stakeholders. So in my mind, we'd have advocates, people like WECA. We'd have daycare providers who are the big centers, daycare providers who provide home daycare. And hear from people around the state and then come up with legislation. We'd meet several times over this summer and come up with legislation to help with this situation. And when 54% of Wisconsinites live in a child care desert, we know that this is really an issue that needs attention.
And when you say a summer study, you would mean next summer?
This coming summer. So we've worked on putting our proposal together. I actually had submitted a similar proposal 2 years ago, but because of COVID, we were not able to have those type of committees in the way we have in the past. Mm. So looking toward this summer, we're going to submit a proposal with updated information on it. And we're hopeful that it will be selected as a committee this summer, and we'll be able to sit down and have some really good dialogue, look at the research, look at options for what we can do to help parents and employers with this issue.
We're talking about child care, family issues with Representative Jill Billings of La Crosse. You can join in with your sentiment, 800-642-1234. President Biden wants to permanently extend the federal child tax credit that was part of his American Rescue Plan. And you've said Wisconsin would greatly benefit from this tax credit. Should Wisconsin use its own tax dollars to provide more tax credits for parents if the federal credit expires?
Well, I think it's interesting that we're starting to, the federal government and on the state government level too, we're starting to look at child care as infrastructure. Right? Child care, we need good quality, affordable, accessible child care to keep our economy running. And so I appreciate the efforts that the federal government has put in and proposed efforts for the future. And we're definitely keeping our eye on what's happening on the federal government as we go forward planning and with what we can do on the state level too.
Earlier this month, you were walking your district. You did an event that started with participants on the campus of UW-La Crosse. You fanned out to neighboring, you know, the local area there. What issues came up? What did you talk about?
Well, I always enjoy being on campus. I'm lucky to have a district that includes Viterbo University, a private university, Western Technical College, and UW-La Crosse. And that that student engagement is such great energy in our community. So I was invited to go on campus with a group of students who are really working in a nonpartisan way to encourage students to be involved and to vote and to learn more about government and how their government worked. So we talked about redistricting. They were interested in what's happening with maps and the process in Madison. So we talked a little bit beforehand. We walked campus and talked about what it means to be a campus ward, the importance of keeping that kind of special interest population together so that students have a representative on our city council, they have a representative on our county board, and that their voice is heard, of course, in this on the state level too. And it's always great. it's always great to be on campus talking with students.
You mentioned redistricting, and Governor Evers told Republicans to start over on their redistricting maps last week, saying that they have to do better if they expect him to sign onto the maps. What is your reaction to the proposed maps?
Well, everybody, I think, well, most people in Wisconsin, they want fair maps. And the problem is when you start with a map, as Republicans did, that was gerrymandered during the last round. It's hard to get fair maps out of that. So I'm a believer that voters should decide who their representatives are. Representatives shouldn't be trying to gerrymander voters into districts and choose their voters. Voters should be able to decide on representatives. So I think ultimately the courts will probably be deciding these districts. And I've always supported and continue to support independent redistricting process in Wisconsin.
And a public hearing is set for Thursday before, you know, Republicans vote on those maps next month. What do you want to see out of the public hearing?
Well, I'll be listening in certainly on those hearings, and I expect that many people will be testifying that they want fair maps, and that there was a process over the last several months where people, regular citizens, looked at maps and put in suggestions for maps and created a set of maps that were in most view of experts who look at this type of thing, they think that those are more fair maps. I'll be interested to hear what people have to say.
I want to touch on homelessness here. Earlier this month, you spoke out against a proposal from Assembly Republicans that would make living on public property a misdemeanor, and you say it could stress jails and courts. How should the legislature respond to people living on public property?
Yeah, this is an issue that really our La Crosse County, the City of La Crosse, advocates like Cooley Cap and Citizen Action Program and Habitat for Humanity. There's been so much work done in our area on this issue. And of course, there's more to be done. And so many communities struggle with this issue. But the problem with the housing package that was introduced by Republicans is that it was really fast tracked. There was, like, I think 1 week from it being a draft to coming to hearings. My colleagues on that committee had to vote on those projects without even seeing a fiscal note, which is, I think, never a good process. So one of the bills is the bill that you're mentioning that would, yeah, criminalize people living on public lands. Now, I understand that this is a problem, but I will tell you that criminalizing people who are staying on public lands will only exacerbate that problem. So whether you fine someone or give them a charge, homeless people are not going to be able to pay a $500 fine. And so what's going to happen, what I'm concerned about is that it's going to really fill up jails and our justice system with people who are homeless and don't have the ability to pay fines. And I'm telling you, housing people in our jails, our local jails, that is not a good solution to that problem. That's a very expensive solution to this problem.
We're discussing how to support families, other bills that Representative Jill Billings is working to advance. She represents La Crosse and French Island. Are you worried about PFAS pollution? What would you suggest for well sampling and pollution remediation? Are you drinking bottled water? Join in 800-642-1234. Back in a minute for more State Cap here on the Ideas Network. It's the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We have a Democratic Representative Jill Billings of La Crosse, a city like others around Wisconsin struggling with PFAS pollution. Thousands of residents on French Island are provided bottled water by the state without an end date. And lawsuits have been filed by both residents and the city. According to the DNR, hundreds of private wells across the state have been impacted by forever chemicals. What action do you want on PFAS or other environmental and climate initiatives? What do lawmakers need to know about your drinking water? 800-642-1234. Representative Jill Billings with us for about 10 more minutes. Give us a sense of the PFAS pollution your constituents are facing in La Crosse and the French Island area.
Well, I imagine what it would be like in my home where suddenly I learn that there's a chemical that's coming out of my faucet, out of my shower, that is odorless, tasteless, and is a forever chemical that is very dangerous for humans. It can create cancers and other problems. That's what happened to people in part of my district. Now, the DNR is providing water for people, as you said, but I've talked to people who may have children who have had issues with cancer, people who were hoping to sell their houses for good prices for part of their retirement package, and all of a sudden they have a lot of questions and a lot of stress over this. So what we really need is a comprehensive package to regulate and address PFAS in Wisconsin. The governor had that included in the budget. It was taken out by joint finance.
That nearly $26 million in funding for testing systems and remediation, adding PFAS staffers at the DNR. Is that what you're mentioning here?
Exactly, exactly. And my colleagues and I reintroduced that as the CLEAR Act. So it allows for testing. It hires more positions to do investigating and testing in Wisconsin, so people don't have to wait so long to get their test results. It includes addressing PFAS and setting standards for PFAS. And it's something that really we need to address now. All eyes should be on this, because I'll tell you, it happening. We have PFAS in Campbell in large part because of practice that was done with this firefighting foam that we're required by the FAA to have on hand at our airport, and our firefighters practice with it, and they've had to use it on an occasion or two. And so anyone in the state who has private wells or public wells around an airport could be an issue. And I think we're seeing now the tip of the iceberg. Our sister city of Eau Claire now has issues with PFAS in their municipal wells around their airports in an industrial area. And I think we're going to see more and more of this. And I have a sense of urgency about this, that we really need to get a hearing on these bills. They were introduced back in May and June, and we've got to get going on this. I am happy to see that the federal government is doing some work on PFAS too. So that is very helpful as we go forward.
Yeah, so you're seeing that as the EPA moves on this issue, you find that in Wisconsin legislatively, that might give you more of a leg up?
Well, I think that if the federal government they created this roadmap on addressing PFAS, including creating standards and looking at sources of PFAS, I mean, all that will, I believe, absolutely help with our initiatives that we're hopefully be able to do here if we can get a hearing on this legislation and get it passed through.
Should private companies be held responsible for the PFAS pollution and pay for remediation?
Well, unfortunately, there was a bill that was introduced by my colleagues on the other side that said that people who had PFAS in their area could receive grants from the state, but then they would have no legal recourse, I think, against the polluters. And I think that was a terrible bill. And I'm so happy that the governor vetoed that bill. I think everything has to be on the table with this issue.
We're talking with Representative Jill Billings, whose district includes La Crosse and French Island. You can join in with your questions, your concerns about PFAS where you are, 800-642-1234. Representative, just one more question here. How will you know, how long do you think, what is the timeline for thousands of your constituents to be drinking bottled water?
Well, I was just actually out at the town of Campbell last week visiting at the town hall, and they're going ahead with a plan to try to bring municipal water in, but not everybody can do that. Some of these wells that are polluted in our area and other areas are actually municipal wells, which leads to extra challenges. So the town of Campbell is moving forward with plans to try to provide safe drinking water in the future to everybody out on the island.
How much does, you know, Wisconsin need to set aside in terms of the money to address this issue? What would be, you know, what would you suggest?
Well, I think that's a, we'll have to see as we go along, and hopefully there'll be federal money coming for this too. This is, again, as I said before, I believe we're seeing the tip of the iceberg on this in Wisconsin.
You're part of a group reintroducing safe harbors legislation this year. We've seen it in past years prohibiting minors from being charged with prostitution. Why is this particular piece of legislation important to reintroduce?
Well, this is a piece of legislation that was requested by one of my constituents right after I was elected. We were at a conference on human trafficking, and they said, can't we do something about this? So my staff and I did research into human trafficking, and I've traveled all over the state to talk to people about human trafficking. Children are trafficked in all 72 counties in Wisconsin. And children, especially those who are at risk, who are vulnerable youths, who have troubled backgrounds, many are homeless or drug dependent. And there's an estimate by the U.S. Department of Justice Anti-Human Trafficking Task Force that estimates 70 to 90% of youth victims have histories of sexual abuse. So these are our children that need our care. They need our protection. And current law says that when law enforcement will find a child in a situation of human trafficking, the child can be charged with prostitution. Now, this leaves a label that follows that child when they're trying to get on the right track, whether it's filling out FAFSA forms for college or applications for jobs. And suddenly there's that box that they check. Have you been in legal trouble before? And this is just wrong. It's just wrong. It's illegal to have sex with a child in Wisconsin. It's against the law. But for some reason, when the money changes hands, and most often that money goes to someone who's trafficking the child, suddenly that child is in a position where they can be charged as a criminal. We know that in our neighboring states who have passed safe harbor, the kids who are brought in are much more likely to give information on the traffickers, the people who are selling them. Now, those are the people that we really want to see with a sentence. We don't want to see these children having a sentence.
Representative Billings, we're out of time. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Jill Billings, representative for Wisconsin's 95th Assembly District. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is a State Capitol Report on The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.